Welcome to the Progressing Recruiters Lives Everywhere podcast, brought to you by Amoria Bond. Join us as we talk to our board members and leaders to gain valuable tips, advice, and inspiration for your own professional life. From climbing the career ladder to the evolution of the recruitment industry, we'll cover it all. Within our industry, there are no limits on how far you can progress, and we want to show you how and why working in recruitment could be the best decision for your life and career. I'm Jenny Walsh, Regional Talent Attraction Manager based in Amoria Bond's Manchester office. And in this episode, I'm talking to Natasha Crump, our Chief People and ESG Officer. Natasha, thanks very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jenny.
Cool. So I guess could you kick us off by telling us a little bit about your role at Amoria Bond and what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Okay. So as you introduced me, I am now Chief People and ESG Officer. And as the job title suggests, it's a pretty broad role. I've worked alongside the business in a consulting and then NED capacity for quite a few years, and then joined the board substantively a couple of years ago. And since then, kind of over time, bit by bit, extra bits have kind of bolted onto the role, which is actually just the way I like it. So day to day, my day and my activities are really, really varied. My remit includes strategy for talent attraction, our people and talent management strategy. It includes managing our content and marketing strategy and team, obviously responsibility for ESG, and basically all things people. So that encompasses everything from employee wellbeing, employee engagement, ED&I strategy, and everything else in between, really, in terms of making sure that we're doing everything that we should be in the best possible way for our people, because at the core of everything I do is really driven by a genuine desire to continue to provide a really great place to work here. It was what genuinely attracted me to work in the business, having sworn that I was never going to work for anyone else again. I was really happy in a consulting capacity, sort of making my own rules as I went along in terms of what I did and when I did it. But just sort of fell for the Amoria Bond culture, the professed culture, and the people. It's the people in this business that make it the business it is. And that's really what my job's all about day to day.
Brilliant. Sounds, like you say, very broad, varied, and like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, it is, but it's an enjoyable responsibility.
Good. And could you walk us through, I guess, some of the key initiatives that you've led in the areas that you've mentioned? So people, D&I, ESG.
Okay. So I think starting with sort of one of my areas of real passion, which is ED&I. So I've had the privilege of really introducing and managing the ED&I strategy for the business. The business has always been a diverse and inclusive business. But when I joined, there were some areas that we needed to work on to really drive that properly into our strategy and into our policies and procedures, to kind of formalise some of the stuff that naturally the business kind of was doing anyway. And as I said before, the openness of the business to trying new things and to really listening to my ideas around ED&I, that's something that really, really resonated with me. There's nothing I've suggested within the business around ED&I that the board have ever said no to, the founders have ever said no to. We've kind of pushed on, and it's been really championed right the way through from our chair, Gary Eldon, all the way through the business. So I think from an ED&I perspective, there's been lots of different things that either I've kind of led on or been privileged to be part of. And I think the key thing for me around that is some of the kind of committees and steering groups that we've created across the business around ED&I, the Inclusion Advocates Programme, which is group-wide and something I'm really, really proud of, that brings together ED&I champions across all of our offices to work together. And then they represent back into their own local offices and kind of then will work with the culture committees or the ED&I committees in their local offices to kind of really manage and deliver a localised programme, but that's part of a bigger group programme. So the ED&I projects that we've done have been something I'm really, really proud of, really passionate about. And they've delivered some really amazing results, not because of me or anything the board have done, but because they've been really run by our people, by our teams. And that's been the key piece to our whole ED&I strategy. It's very employee led rather than leader led, which sounds counterintuitive, but it's the best way to do it. and driving a real accountability at board level to make sure we're actually delivering change, continuous improvement in terms of ED&I, because it's an ongoing thing. Other areas, I think for me, from a people perspective, having kind of really sort of stepped into the role substantively during COVID, is around employee wellbeing. And that's been a real learning journey for me personally, as well as for the business. Again, the business is always invested in mindset, in resilience, mindset mastery. They've kind of been at the forefront of industry leading in that respect. But COVID kind of uncovered a real need for us to look beyond kind of mindset mastery and look at actual employee well-being in its truest form, and that's quite kind of all-encompassing, and it's a really big responsibility, and it's an area I've really had to invest in my own learning and knowledge around, and we have worked with some brilliant partners, because what we're not is experts in everything, and no one, regardless of what role they're in, has got the answers for everything. So, you know, whether that's me as chief people officer or any of the other members of the board, it's really, really important when you need to bring in the experts that you need to help develop a programme. That's what we've done with wellbeing, and I think that's what we continue to do really well. Yes, we've developed and in-house quite a lot of capability as well, but we'll continue to invest in and work with expert partners who can really properly support our people. So wellbeing has been a really big part of what I've kind of had to learn myself in this role, but also that I'm again really proud of in terms of some of the initiatives that we've got, and myself now and a number of colleagues around the business being mental health first aiders. Just even having mental health first aiders within our business is really important, because it sends a really clear message to our people that we're here for them. And that whilst, again, we might not have all the answers, we're talking about mental health, we're talking about wellbeing. It's allowing that conversation to happen. It's kind of legitimizing that conversation. And that to me is really, really important when it comes to employee wellbeing. And it's not just a soundbite, and it's not just something that, you know, we tick a box in. You know, we've changed policies, we've changed what people can spend their annual personal development allowance on, so that people can use it to help with their mental health and wellbeing as well. And that's been really impactful. The number of emails and conversations I have about how that has helped people and how that's then played back into the business as well has been really, really remarkable. So again, kind of from a wellbeing perspective, really proud. I'm beyond proud of what we've done in terms of employer brand. And, you know, you've been along on the journey with me with that, and the content team, and just kind of really understanding who we are, getting very, very clear on who we are as a business, and then making sure that we're genuinely reflecting that back out, and kind of working with you and the talent attraction team over the last 18 months or so has been an absolute joy, as well as bringing together the content and marketing team and kind of really making sure that actually what we're showcasing externally is basically a mirror into our organisation, and then also making sure that plays out in terms of actual employee experience. And alongside that is all the other stuff that you'd expect around measuring employee engagement, holding ourselves accountable for how much people enjoy working here, and listening to feedback. So one of the things that we've introduced over the last couple of years is moving away from an internal kind of cultural survey that we used to do on SurveyMonkey, and we've moved on to the Engagement Multiplier platform. It's a great platform. It's an anonymized platform. It allows us to run regular full engagement surveys or cultural surveys and pulse checks as well. And the beauty of that platform is that you can interact with people who've left comments anonymously. So unless they want to tell you that it's them over the platform that's left some feedback. But the beauty of that is I can interact with people who've left comments, whether they're good comments that I want to build on and do more of, positive feedback, or whether it's constructive or negative feedback that I want to understand more, so that actually then we can take action that's specifically going to change and improve things for employees. That's been a game changer for us. It's a great platform, and it's been a really, really important part of kind of building out our employee engagement and our employer brand as well, in terms of what we're offering to people. And then obviously I can't talk to you and not talk about ESG and talk about Peru and some of the other charitable projects that we've done. But, you know, that's probably a podcast in itself. But for me, you know, that's right up there in terms of the things that we've done and the initiatives we've led on, is some of the things that we've achieved around the work we've done in Peru over the last 12 months, the number of trees we've planted, something like 75,000 now around the world. These are really, really exciting projects, and they're genuinely, it's just a privilege to be part of.
Amazing. Some really, really incredible and impressive projects and meetings.
I told you it was varied though, right?
Yeah, it really is. Could you tell us maybe about a particular challenge that you faced in one of those areas and how you overcame it?
Oh, okay. So challenges are a really interesting one for me, because I tend to just see a challenge as like a huge opportunity. And that sounds a little bit twee, but you work with me all the time, and I just like really relish the opportunity to move things and to change things. And wherever I see there's an opportunity, I just tend to kind of just charge on. And maybe that's actually probably the biggest challenge for me. And it's probably more a general answer here. But what I would say is, because this business is so kind of forward facing, and like I mentioned earlier, it's very rare for somebody to push back when there's an idea about how we can improve things, particularly when it comes to employee experience. The general answer is, yeah, go make it happen. And I guess for me, the biggest challenge for me, given the remit that I've got and given the energy that I've got and the fact that, you know, once I'm zoned in on something, it will happen. I think probably the biggest challenge for me is making sure that I'm not running it too quickly, too much at once, and making sure that actually the structure is really there. And I guess that's the G of my ESG kind of remit, is actually making sure that things follow all the way through. Because it'd be dead easy to kind of go, right, here's our ED&I strategy, we set up the committees, right, let's go, what's next, here's our wellbeing program, we've got mental health first aiders in now, let's go. And I think really the challenge is making sure that those programs, those initiatives are accountable, that they're actually having an impact, and that they're sustainable. And that's absolutely true across everything within my remit, is you can't just drop it and run. You've got to really make sure that you're addressing something, you're doing it for the right reasons, it's not a vanity project, and actually that it has an immediate impact, great, but it's got a sustained impact. So I think the biggest challenge for me is making sure that I maintain that focus at a personal level. It's making sure that I really do hold myself and my teams and the business accountable for continuous sustained impact. That's probably the biggest one, but it's the challenge. It's a great challenge to have, right? It's a nice problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favourite things about working with you. You know, you want to get stuff done, but you want to get it done properly. And like you said earlier, when you referred to, like, it's not just a tick box exercise. It's about making sure the right reasons are there why you're doing it. And like you say, you're holding yourselves and others accountable to it. Thinking now about leadership, what stands out to you, or moment or moments stand out to you as your proudest achievement as a leader?
I'd say proudest achievement as a leader, hands down, over recent years, has got to be what we delivered in Peru. So if people listening don't know about the Peru project, Moria Bond has a charitable trust. They've been working in a poor area, impoverished area in Peru called Las Laderas for 10-12 years now. And over that period, they've delivered a number of amazing projects. A number of different employee teams have travelled to Las Laderas, built 101 houses, number of soup kitchens, lots of amazing things with really great long-term sustained impact. Last year, probably about this time last year, we agreed with Project Peru, who are our local on-ground partners in Las Laderas, that we would fund and build a children's refuge extension for them. So they have a children's refuge, and we agreed to fund and build an extension so that they can look after kids for longer and get kids through full education, which is the only way really to give them a real chance of kind of breaking the cycle of poverty. And I think it was a massive challenge because of COVID, and COVID had a huge impact in Peru. We didn't know if we could do it. We didn't know when we'd be able to go, would we be able to go? And all of a sudden we had 2 months to go. We got the green light from Project Peru, and we had, I think, 2 months to go from that moment to when we needed to get there for it to time in, to organise a team of volunteers from across the business to do the fundraising that we needed to build the extension and to get all the logistics sorted. And we did it. And I say we, because it was everyone across the business pulled together. And we raised so much money as a business that, as you know, Jenny, we got out there, we built the extension, or we helped the local builders build the extension. I have to say, they did most of the work. It was a lot longer build than just the week we were there. We also were able to fund and build another soup kitchen, which was just unbelievable. We were able to do some fun stuff with the kids, like a day trip for them. We were able to redecorate the refuge. Just so much that we achieved, and it was done in such a small space of time. And just being part of that and being kind of leading the project team there was a massive privilege, and without doubt, really, really proud of it. And I think then my second one is really more to do with my team, because last year the content and marketing team who are part of my team, they just absolutely smashed it last year. And as a leader, to have watched that team, to have brought that team together, to have built that team, to have then kind of worked with them to define what our plan was, what our strategy was around content and marketing for the business, and then to support them and lead them, but really to watch them deliver that was amazing. And then they got the Team of the Year award at the AGM. Now that, as a manager proud moment, That was amazing too. So as a leader, definitely the Peru project, as a kind of manager proud moment, it's got to be that content marketing team. And when they got that award on at the AGM, I was so proud of them all.
Amazing. Oh, it's making me smile thinking about Peru and like thinking back to the memories of it. Just, yeah, fantastic.
It's like nothing else being part of that team. I think we were really, really lucky, Jenny. It was an amazing team out there as well.
It really was. Really was. I agree. Cool. So last but not least, what advice would you give to young professionals who, I guess, are at the beginning of their career in recruitment and aspire to progress into leadership in future?
I think the one that I wish I'd known myself was be you, like genuinely be you. Learn from people, adapt as you go along in terms of your style and obviously from a development perspective. But be confident in who you are and that being you is enough. So what you need to find is your way of doing things. Do it naturally in your own way. Because trying to do it somebody else's way isn't sustainable and it's not fun. The moment I started really enjoying leadership is when I realised it was okay to show people a bit of vulnerability. It was okay that people realised I was pretty quirky, and it was okay to be me. And actually, do you know what? The moment I did that as well, I became far more effective. So I genuinely think being yourself and being honest about who you are and finding your own way of doing leadership, that's the way to do it. And I wish I'd known that 20 odd years ago, because I think I'd have enjoyed the ride a lot sooner.
Love it. Amazing. Well, thank you very much, Natasha, for joining me today and your valuable insights and advice. It's a wrap for today.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Jenny.
So thanks everyone for tuning in. Be sure to join us next week for another exciting episode. And for more information about career and recruitment, please check out our website, amoriabond.com.